Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with the Honorable Naomi Yamamoto, BC Minister of Advanced Education.
Hi, Stephen.
You bring an incredible history in coming into this interview, and thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm looking forward to it.
You come from a remarkable family. Can you share insights from your family history in your early years?
You know what? Thanks for asking, Stephen, because I actually think, the person who I am has been greatly defined by some of the struggles and challenges that my family went through, and in particular, my mom and dad. And I think why post-secondary education is so important, not just to me, obviously, but to British Columbians. So, you know, I'm actually a third-generation Canadian on my one side of the family. On the other side, I'd be considered a fourth-generation Canadian. But even then, when my dad was 14, and so he was in grade 8 at Point Grey High School in Vancouver, the war started. And he was and his family were relocated. They were interned to a relocation camp or a prison camp in the Kootenays of British Columbia. And so, you know, my dad wasn't able to complete high school with his friends. And actually, while they were being relocated in this camp, he wasn't able to start school for an additional year. So he eventually started grade 9 and finished grade 9. And then, you know, the war ended when he was 17 years old. His family moved around the interior of British Columbia. And finally ended up back in the Vancouver area, and he ended up working at a mental hospital as a nurse's aide, but again with only grade 9 education. And then he went up to the Dew Line, which is in northern part of this country, and he worked in first aid, again with only a grade 9 education. And he decided that, you know, he'd take this job so he could save a lot of money and go back to school, and he actually did that. While he was working, he completed grade 10, 11, 12, and at that time grade 13 by correspondence. And he tells us of this letter that he received from the Department of Education saying that he's completing his education too fast and he's got to slow down. But he wrote them back and said, I don't have the time, you know, because he's not a young kid and time was marching on. So he did all that. And you know what? He was 32 years old when he finished his grade 13. But he enrolled in UBC at University of British Columbia in the Faculty of Pharmacy. And by this time, I was born in 1960. And then my sister and my brother were born a few years later. So he completed his degree in pharmacy, his undergraduate degree, and then ended up with a PhD in 1967 with three kids and a wife. And, you know, that's why I never, ever took post-secondary education for granted. When somebody like my dad was able to complete that journey, despite the challenges he faced, it's pretty incredible.
Wow, that's an amazing story. I can see why he's an inspiration to you.
Yeah, you know, he is. He worked on enzymes and all these really cool things. I remember the first one of the first gifts he gave me was a scalpel set. And I was just a young kid, and then he gave us a microscope. So every time we cut ourselves, we'd be, you know, squirting blood out onto the slides and looking at our blood. And then the first, I think, gift he gave us as kids was a molecular building set, you know, like a Tinker Toy set. But, you know, it's just part of how I grew up and why I think post-secondary education is such a valuable asset. You know, it's challenging. We all have our unique stories in getting there, and certainly mine is actually quite boring compared to my dad's. And you know the other thing, Stephen? When my dad was born in Canada, and so was actually his mom, but, you know, he wasn't allowed to vote until he was 22.
That's, again, amazing that, you know, his commitment to this country and to his family and to service. And I guess that now goes to this next question. I understand you're shy, and yet you're in public service. So why is public service so important to you, and what were the catalysts for your commitment in this area?
Well, you know what? I'm an introvert, but I'm an extroverted introvert on that scale. What I do like, though, is meeting people, and I love the one-on-one conversations that I have with people that I meet. I think that, you know, I've always liked to serve people. I've always been a giver. And I was always involved in the community, on boards or volunteering. And I thought perhaps I could make a difference at the provincial level. So I decided that I would seek a nomination for the BC Liberal Party. And I won that nomination and then subsequently won the election.
So what lessons can you share from, you know, one or more of your prior roles in the public and private sectors?
Well, it's not a lesson. We've heard this a lot, but I've always tried to under-promise and over-deliver. Whether it's been I used to have a design studio, a graphic design studio for 20 years, and I worked with the Chamber of Commerce movement as well. And I think that it's always been a way of doing business or helping out in the community. So you're never disappointing anybody, and in fact, surprising people with I think unexpected results.
Now, you come from this remarkable family, and I see this perfect fit between your family history and now you being the Minister of Advanced Education. So can you profile your current role?
Well, I'm just getting into it. I'm just 5 weeks into the role, and I guess what I see is the opportunity for this government to increase the number of students that we train in high demand fields. So we know right now that those fields are nursing and medicine and some skilled trades and engineering. I absolutely believe that for us to succeed, we need to develop the knowledge-based sector of our economy. And I think we're actually on the right track, and post-secondary education is the key to that.
Well, I know that I was talking to David O'Leary, who's the dean at Northwest College, and he said you did a visit in that area, and he was just really impressed with all the things that you had to say. So,
you know what, Northwest College was the first college that I went to in my new role, and you know, I'm a huge fan of the college system. I was chair of Capilano College. It's now a university. But the colleges in this in our provincial system in BC are very reactive. They're a huge part of the community, especially in small communities. They're a key component to the success of communities and meeting the labor market demands. And because colleges tend to be smaller, they're very nimble and very reactive to what's required.
So then what are your goals for the short and medium term?
Well, my real short-term goal is just to get to as many of the institutions that I can in order to talk to the administration and faculty and the students. And I guess what I've been trying to do is ask the right questions, because I think that's the key to anything. I think that's the key to success. It's the key to our evolution is are we asking the right questions? So, you know, things like why are we doing that, or, you know, how come it's done this way, or is there a better way? So, you know, with my visits, I'm able to ask those questions and kind of satisfy my curiosity.
Well, I think you should be commended for being so accessible and visiting the colleges and universities and talking to the administration and the faculty and so on. Now, in your travels then, what are you finding are the biggest opportunities and challenges in advanced education?
Well, one of the biggest challenges we're going to see is what's going to be happening, you know, 10 years out from now. We're anticipating that there's going to be over a million jobs that need filling in 10 years, and three-quarters of those jobs are going to require post-secondary education of some sort. And I guess our biggest challenge right now would be to increase the participation of high school students in their transition to post-secondary.
That's amazing. So what are your views then on technology education and how it should evolve?
I think that what we need to do is to provide learning in platforms that are outside of the traditional platforms or the traditional methods of delivery. So right now, most of our students will take a course or complete a program in person at a campus facility, you know, at a university or college or an institute. But because of the busy lives we lead and the desire to have ongoing training and education, a lot of people will be looking at advancing their education, but in a manner that suits their time frame. So, you know, if you're working part-time or full-time or you've got kids, you may not be able to get to a campus. So I think what technology can do is to provide access for classes online. And we're already a long ways there in BC. We have over 2,000 classes that are available online. But I think the key is, Stephen, is ability to take programs, increase improve your education, and in a lot of cases online, we can do that for free because the online world has this repository of courses available from institutions, you know, across North America, or in the world actually, and a lot of those programs are available for instructors to take and to tweak or to, you know, change and adapt for their own situations. But students can go online too and you know, take those courses. They don't necessarily get the credit, the official credit, but they can actually, you know, advance their education by having access to these courses online.
And you're still early into this, so do you have any success stories you can share in advanced education?
Success stories. Well, you know, every time I go to an institution, I have the opportunity to meet students. And there's this one student that I met at Thompson Rivers University, which is a new university, one of the seven new universities that we created in the last few years in BC. And this is in the interior of the province. This is a First Nations student who came from Fort Nelson, so that's northern BC. He was a laborer and wasn't feeling very fulfilled with the job he was doing. And it was, I guess, hit and miss in terms of the type of work. So he came to... went to Thompson Rivers University. They have a mobile trades training program there, and he was 3 weeks into this training, and he was on a simulator that helps students learn how to operate large equipment, an excavator in this case, and he was about halfway through his training. He'll go back to Fort Nelson and to, I think he said, an $85,000 job. But, you know, this is a young man who realized that he didn't like the future that was written for him, and he decided to change it. And, you know, I see those stories every time I go to an institution or a college or university. It's life-changing. There are some real life-changing stories, and everybody's got a unique one. That's what I enjoy hearing.
Now, you already talked about technology and advanced education and online content and so on. Can you provide any other predictions for the future of advanced education?
Futures. Well, I think that, you know what, these are just my thoughts. I think that the time it takes to get a traditional degree is going to reduce. So right now, most traditional undergraduate degrees take 4 years. You know what, I think that's too long. I think that we need to be able to react quicker to the labor market demands, and I see that time frame shortening considerably. I think we're going to see an increase in international students here in BC, and I think we're going to see a lot more free online courses provided for students who want to, you know, take classes, as I mentioned before, courses, but not have to go to an actual campus.
When I look at your background and all the contributions you've made, it's just a tremendous history of success. So what tips can you give to others to enable success?
Well, you know, one thing that I have always said to other people is that if you want to succeed, if you want to do well, you need to surround yourself with people who also want you to succeed. And it's actually pretty simple to do. And that's worked for me in my business life, and it certainly worked for me during my election campaign. I mean, you can't do it alone. It takes teamwork. And I think the other thing you need to do is you have to be curious. You have to keep asking those questions, and you know, ask yourself what's really exciting right now? Why are we doing things like we do? The way we do it, and is there a better way? And I think leaders constantly ask themselves that every day. And I also think that if you want to be successful and you want to enable success, you need to be bold. And I think that comes from my entrepreneurial background, my business background. You don't see that so much in public life, but I think you need to be bold and you need to be aggressive, but you can't be reckless. But I think there has to be that edge. So, you know, if you take all those things into account, I think you have a good recipe for success.
Now, I know you've got a really heavy schedule, so we'll get to one last question, and that is, if you were doing this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Well, you know what? There's only one question on the minds of all of British Columbians right now, and that is, who is going to win the Stanley Cup? And the answer is the Vancouver Canucks. Huge hockey fan. I hope hope you are too, because oh my gosh, this has been quite the season.
Absolutely, and I know you've got to go. And maybe we can throw in one other item. Do you have a story, another story you can share, and then we'll close it off?
Another story. Well, you know, I never thought that I've never ever thought that I wanted to shoot a gun, but I was offered that opportunity last week when I visited the Justice Institute, which is one of the institutions that's under the this ministry. And my first reaction was, oh no, why would I want to do that? And that was probably like 1 second thought. And I thought, why not? So, you know, for me, the opportunity to shoot in a controlled environment, under the supervision of experts is actually quite thrilling. And, you know, I can absolutely understand now how difficult it is to shoot a target. And, you know, if you were a police officer you know, you had to pull that gun, my target wasn't moving. I wasn't moving. I had all the time in the world. And, you know, I barely hit the target. These officers who we think, you know, why didn't they just shoot the gun out of their hand, or why didn't they just shoot the leg? They're moving. Their target's moving. I have a great appreciation now for stress and skill, actually, that the police officers have in those situations.
Well, absolutely. We have to honor everybody who provides those kind of services to our communities, and we're indebted to them. You know, Naomi, I'm just amazed at your tremendous background and the fact that you're willing to take this time to share some of your insights with our audience. And we will continue to follow your significant contributions, and we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and insights with our audience.
Thanks, Stephen. I really enjoyed talking with you.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our interview with the Honorable Naomi Yamamoto, BC Minister of Advanced Education.